There's so much to cover this week that I'm just gonna start with the first thing that I saw, which was Cole Beasley coming out and saying he's not vaccinating, he's not, he doesn't have enough information on the effects of the vaccine, and he's not doing it. Now, the NFL has protocols in place for those that are vaccinated, which are, I believe, every 14 days they'll get tested. And then a separate set of rules for the players that aren't vaccinated. I believe they're getting tested like every day, and they can't go out, on road games. They're kind of stuck in their hotel room. Have you heard? Is it something that the players, I don't know, maybe behind closed doors are saying they're not sure they want to do it, but because of the protocols or maybe pressure, they're doing it? Because we've also heard like Josh Allen, Cole Beasley's teammate in Buffalo there, say he wasn't 100% saying yes, I'm going to do it. So he's kind of on the fence. Any kind of, without naming names, of course, but is there any that you've been hearing more players who are kind of hesitant to get it done?
Yes, they are. These are young men, and they feel like they can weather whatever storm. You know how that is. We feel like we're kind of invincible. And I know, I don't know all the side effects neither. So I'm not going to play doctor. But the league is making them make a choice, because they have these protocols in place that if you do, you're good. Like you said, every 14 days, you can do whatever team activities. You can ride on the main team plane. You can do the main team things. But if you're not vaccinated, you're going to be treated differently.
Now,
And
is the non-main team plane, is there more legroom because there's less people?
there may be.
Maybe there's an advantage.
You know what? I started laughing at when I first heard that, because I go, there's going to be a lot of guys who might act like they wasn't vaccinated, just because there's going to be other perks. There's certain things you're not going to have to do. There might be meetings you don't have to go to. There's planes you don't have to get on. There's going to be other perks per se
Yeah.
for people who are not vaccinated that people don't even think of.
Maybe missing some of those contact drills you don't want to participate in.
Absolutely. So it's just, I don't know how they're going to police it. Obviously, they're going to try to. I think it puts a different type of pressure on a player, and it makes a player react like Cole Beasley. He's his own man, and he wants to live his life his way. And that's one of the founding things of our country,
Yeah,
freedom.
and it's interesting because to be a professional athlete, there needs to be, you have to have a certain sense of invincibility, right?
Yes.
Especially football, to go out there and put your body on the line every single week in, week out. If you think, hey, I'm going to get hurt or something can hurt me, right? That puts you at a disadvantage. So
Absolutely.
I understand that. So I don't necessarily, disagree with what he's saying. And no one knows this. No one knows the long-term effects. Now I do say this, anyone that has a kid that's kind of 20 years or younger probably gave them the chicken pox vaccine 20 years ago when it was brand new.
Right.
So now maybe we're a little bit smarter. Maybe the internet's just too informative now, than it
Right.
was 20 years ago. So I get it, but so you don't think there's going to be any, there's going to be no backlash from other players. Is everyone kind of open, like, hey,
I
you make your
don't,
choice?
yeah, I don't think there'll be backlash between the players until the real games start. When you need that player to help win football games, there's a player who is real. Involved in the plans of winning, and you're missing him because he's not vaccinated. He's missing certain meetings. He's missing certain walkthroughs. He's missing certain real informative football, high intelligent things. Then that can become a problem.
I'm not knocking Cole Beasley, but if it was Josh Allen, it's probably a different conversation, right?
Absolutely, and that's the part that bothers me. I mean, he's no different than anybody else. So we blew it up. But if it was Josh Allen, what would be the narratives that are out there now?
So from vaccination to, I've struggled with this one a lot because I understand why it's a story. However, I also feel like it shouldn't be a story, but I understand that it needs to be a story until it's not a story. Is that, did I talk circular enough there for you? So Carl, I hate that I always butcher his last name, but Carl Nassib?
Nassib.
Nassib. He was drafted in Cleveland by the Browns in 2016 when you were there. Yeah. So do you know this young man? He's done something, obviously, coming out, being the first, I guess, active NFL player to come out as gay. There's been some, you know, Michael Sam, I believe, came out and then was drafted but didn't really play. We've had some retired players, but he's the first kind of, you know, young, active, you know, quality player to come out. So first let's start on him. What do you know about him as, you know, when he was on your team?
Very quality young man, hardworking, come from a great family. I enjoyed him. I thought he stood for all the things that NFL football players stand for: hard work, intelligence, became a pro, was brought up in the Cleveland Browns organization and learned how to work, how to be the best he could be. I'll be the first to tell you, I'm shocked. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm not. Mm-hmm. That caught me off guard. It really threw me for a loop because I've been around him so much, high-fiving and laughing. Not that anything's wrong with that, but I was surprised.
Right.
You know, so that was my first reaction to it all.
So and he went from, you know, with you on the Browns to your old team to the Raiders. Right. And the way he announced it was very, oh, by the way, which I thought was great, by the way. And I guess the question is, like I said, for me, I'm beyond that point where it's just like I don't even feel like someone needs to come out as, hey, you do you. That's, I honestly don't care either way. I know that's maybe some people say that's a bad thing, but I don't. But I understand that for the, you know, the LGBT plus community, right? For people to come out and make more people aware and understand and, you know, obviously what they've been through in the past. I get it, why it's important for, you know, athletes to come out and famous people to come out and kind of remove that perception. Do you think it changes? Does his team look at him any different, or it's like, I don't care, he's my teammate, everything remains the same? Obviously the majority, there might be a minority that maybe is effective. What are your, like, if it was in your locker room, do you deal with it? Do you talk about it?
Yeah, I think you have to.
Yeah.
I think you have to, you have to make sure that you tackle the elephant that's in the room. And the elephant in the room is that, hey, look, this is real, you know, and we're dealing with it in real time. This is not on somebody else's team, this is on our team. And you need to let players express how they feel. Now, he's got a ton of support. You know, some players on the team has really stepped up and supported him. But at the same time, like you said, you don't hear from the other group on the other side who are not in support. Right. And those things can divide the locker room really quickly. So I think Coach Gruden has to do a great job of being very transparent and putting it out there for the team to deal with, to address, because there's questions. I mean, a lot of our parents, and again, I can't speak for the players on the team, but I just know a lot of parents are old school.
Right.
And so what you've been taught, that's what you know. And so we should be at a time where it's not as something we should have to talk about, but you do have to talk about it. You know, you can't just sweep it and say, okay, well, we'll just let the media take care of it, because it's going to be, I'm sure, in comments somewhere, there's going to be something where somebody doesn't like it.
Right.
And so it could bleed over into your locker room. So hopefully he will address it. I'm sure, John.
I know you can't, don't name names, but he can't be the only NFL player.
You just said it. I mean, think about that. So he had enough. And Carl's that type of man, in my opinion. He has enough inner strength to come out and say, hey, this is who I am. There's a lot of people who don't have that kind of strength, and they're afraid to live their life to the fullest. And that's my only disappointment for people, that if that's who you are, that's who you are. You know, because how can you be the best version of you if you're hiding something? So
it's an interesting world we live in, where, and I've used it in the last couple of days, where I'm describing him as being courageous and brave for being himself, right? Like, it's almost, I that's why I struggle when I say he shouldn't have to be brave to be himself. And yet he was, because, you know, in a locker room, and I said this, I was on another podcast a couple of, yesterday when it, or 2 days ago when he first released it, and they asked me, and I said, I've been in a locker room. I know, and you know, what he's going to hear, what he's going to deal with on the field from opposing teams, right? Because they're going to try and get under his skin.
Absolutely.
And for him to do it is really brave. It is very courageous for him to say, to put himself out there and say, hey, this is who I am. And just, and it doesn't change who I am, if that makes sense.
Interesting. It makes a ton of sense, Anthony. Just like you said, I mean, he's going to, at some point in time, it's just the nature of practice and the grind of pro football. You're going to get into it with somebody. Is that going to become a conversation? You know, you look at the narrative surrounding everything that was talked about when it came to him. There was a picture of Michael Sam being drafted, you know, kissing his mate, you know, so all those feelings are going to all come back up and everybody's going to have to deal with them one way or the other. You know, either you say, ah, that is what it is, or you have some real thought about it, you know? And so that's why I say it has to be dealt with the right way, because he's now an active player on a team. Like you said, he's going to play against other players who are going to, who, how do you know how the other team is not going to affect them?
And so, like I said, some people who may not even, let's say, maybe not openly care, will say stuff to him to try to get under his skin. Yeah. That's just the nature of football, right? Whether you
That's what they do anyways.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I put it out there, and it's interesting, even the comments from fans and people in my comment section, half of the people were how brave, so proud of him, it's amazing. And then there was, listen, there was a group of fans, they were the minority, but they're right. I'd cut him if he was on my team. I wouldn't let him into my locker room. Oh, he's gonna have sacks on and off the field. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like,
that's what he's gonna have to do.
And I'm sitting there reading it going, what do you say? Wow. And then I'm like, wow, how is he going to deal with that? So, you know, all power to him, you know, good for him to come out and be that. Like I said, there's no way he's the only, you know, maybe it helps, you know, so, you know, some other people as well to say, hey, this is who I am as well. And maybe, and I think with everything else, like I'll use the entertainment industry for example, when people first started to come out, you know, like the Ellens of the world, mm-hmm. it was a big deal. Now mm-hmm. it's kind of like, oh, okay. That actor. Oh, yep, sure. Oh, yeah, I kind of saw that. Yeah, it's nothing. So maybe this is that moment that we look back, you know, in a couple of years ago. Hey, remember when Carl came out? Yep, that was the one. And now,
but that's what gets me, because so many people say just what you just said. They go, "Why are you shocked?" And I go, "Wait a minute. What do you mean? Why am I shocked?" Because I knew Carl only one way. I didn't know Carl the other way. So I am shocked with surprise. You know,
yeah. Well, everyone thinks that there's like these bells and whistles, like, I knew that. Yeah. No, it's not everyone's out there, right?
Yeah, I don't look at it like that. You know, I'm not in that environment where I know the signs or what it looks like. You know, there's certain times you can look and say, maybe what is this? You know, but at the same time, I never would have suspected that. And I was shocked that most people, I've had so many people call me, they want me to be on their show about it, and I wouldn't do it. You know, just because I just didn't think it was right. I'm not trying to make it a national story because he is a young man and we should be beyond a lot of it. But at the same time, it is a story.
Yeah. And like I said at the beginning, it's one of those things where for me, it's not a story, but it is because, and like I said, if I put on that hat of if I was in, you know, that community, I'd understand. Right. Yeah, I'd want more people to come out. I don't want people to perceive us as, hey, look, this is our sexual orientation. It doesn't have to do with anything else. If you think about it, Carl's that same guy, right? Is the exact same guy that he's been for the last however many years. It's just now you know something about his private life that you didn't know before. So I think that's why it's a story. And that's obviously because you were there and the Browns are, they're going to ask you, did you see, you know, did you see? And there's going to be some bad ones too, right? Like I said, there's some questions. I'm not even going to repeat. I told you the nice stuff. What people were saying. So like I said, good for him. I hope it doesn't change anything. Other than if there's other people who are struggling, because you know this as well as I do. If you're holding something inside, if you have a secret, that eats at you. That can drive you crazy.
going to eat at you. And it's the biggest thing. You don't become the best version of you.
Right.
And that's the biggest thing. And I think Carl, just me knowing him a little bit, I think there was something probably that was hampering him from being the best he could be. And I think he felt like he needed to let it all go in order for him to see if he can reach that ceiling. I truly believe that about him.
So I don't know him very well. You know, he's a defensive player on the Raiders. So I'll be honest, I don't know him all that well. As a player on the field, where does he, like, where he was a third round pick, I think second pick of the third round. So yeah,
he was a third round
drafted pretty high. So
he was a leading sacker, you know, at Penn State. You know, he broke some records. I mean, had a leading sack that year, you know, his senior year. Long, you know, Langley kind of guy who's an overachiever, works extremely hard, is going to do exactly what the coaches ask, has a sense of humor, has a love for his teammates.
He's going to need that too.
He will. Yeah. He likes to win. I mean, he exemplified all the things you would want in a football player. I don't think anybody's ever seen him like, you know, a Lawrence Taylor or a Khalil Mack or anything like that, but he's that next other level down below, you know, that guy who's gonna
so,
be
a starter in this league who can make an impact, but maybe not kind of, yeah. Listen, there's nobody on a Lawrence Taylor level really, but yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm glad we got that out of the way. I wanted to talk, like I said, because I saw that he was on your team, and get those two ones out of the way. And now we can move into some football. And we've been every week, we've been taking a look at a division. This one, you know, I hate to steal a line from Forrest Gump, but the NFC East is like a box of chocolates. You really don't know what you're going to get. Because one week they look, every team looks like they're going to win the division. Then every team looks like they might not win another game, at least last year. Obviously, the Cowboys had some injuries last year. But let's start with, do we still call them America's team? Yeah, why not? Let's call them America's team. Let's start with the Cowboys. Dak comes back from an injury that, in your experience, is something that, will we see some ill effects early on, some rust, or he's the type of guy you think come back from it?
I think he can come back from it. I think he's far enough removed, and I think he's already practicing, that I think we'll see a good version of that. I mean, of Dak. I think him having his coordinator, those things in place, better receivers, and when he left, I think all those things are plus for him. My question is still about their teams on defense.
Yeah.
Having a defensive coordinator, that emphasis will change. They will be better. There's no doubt about it. But how much better will they be? And then do they have the talent defensively as another team that's in their division? That's one of my big questions.
Yeah, because on the offensive end, again, every conversation we have is always about health. So assuming everybody's healthy, right? When you got Dak, Zeke, that wide receiver core, the offensive line seemed a little shaky last year. Do you think there is that a question mark going into this season again?
Because they beat up. They had some injuries. Yeah. You know, they didn't just lose a quarterback. They lost a lot of linemen too, like you mentioned. And so it's going to be interesting to see how they restock, reshuffle, how fast those guys come back off their injuries. Are they still the same players? Some of them are getting older. You know, just where are they in their career? And so, but I think everybody's anticipating that Dallas is going to have a great year, and I can't wait to see if they do.
I don't think I've ever asked you to do this, so if you can refuse to answer, I will say I'm not a huge fan of Mike McCarthy. I'm trying to think of a way to word it that I can get you to answer. Is he the right coach for that team?
Let me say this. I'm not going to Mike McCarthy's had a lot of success in this league. He's done a great job, a lot of wins under his belt. I think people don't understand the situation he put himself in, because he put himself in that. He wanted a job. He got the job with the Dallas Cowboys. But he's not doing what he does best, which is called plays. He gave that to someone else. So we saw a whole different man for the first time in his career in a long time, trying to just manage a game as a head coach. I know what that feels like. I know what I felt like my last year, Cleveland. you feel disconnected. I don't care what nobody says. You don't feel like your value is there because the way you came up and what you were doing, you're not doing anymore. So I can see why people would look at him and go, who is this guy? But I assure you that he'll find his way this year, because you need to go through that year to understand where you can help, where you can push, pull, be a value to your staff, be a value to your players in order to get the best out of them. He needed to go through that. And I don't think people ever thought about that.
So let me ask you that question, because you probably better than anyone else can answer this. When you're the one calling the plays, hey, you're focused on all the situations, what's going on, because you're calling plays, you need to be dialed in there. When that comes off your plate, what do you do?
You just said it. You feel kind of lost. I mean, because you still do the game management things, that doesn't change. But your plate was so full. I mean, really full. I mean, as full as you can get, because you had the game plan. You were the primary play caller. You were the one that set things up for players, create the environment for them, create the practice for them. Then all of a sudden you have nothing that way. You find yourself trying to dive into more things defensively, especially if you're an offensive guy. And especially if you turn it over to some guy, because you don't want to be looking over your shoulder. You don't want to make him feel like all of a sudden you don't trust him.
Right. You don't want to micromanage him, because you put them in that position.
Absolutely.
To do a job, yeah.
Now, if the guy's not doing a good job, then you have to step in, because sure, that's what your baby is. But at the same time, I understand, you know, what Dallas was. They kept the young kid because him and Dak did some impressive things the year before. Well, I mean, but again, so has Mike McCarthy. So at the same time, you have to weigh that. And I'm sure he went through it. Nobody else will understand that. I do. I saw it. I saw it in his face.
Okay. So the next, no particular order on these teams, but We'll go with the New York Giants, the G-Men, Big Blue,
the G-Man,
the New York Football Giants. They're my best Chris Berman. Daniel Jones, we don't know yet what quarterback right. he's going to be. They spent a lot of money getting him some weapons. I believe we're going to have a healthy Saquon Barkley back. What do you see from the Giants?
You just said it. I think Daniel Jones is the key. Will he live up to his draft status? If he does, I think good things will happen. They're getting better defensively. Leonard Williams made a huge difference for their football team. Getting Saquon back will be a huge difference. The receivers that they put on the team now, obviously Galladay, you know, they get from Detroit. They draft a young kid out of Florida. So they're more explosive than they've probably ever been. But at the same time, this quarterback's got to manage this, you know, and is he really the right guy? I think this is a make or break year for him there. He needs to show that either he's grown or he hasn't. So I think we're going to find out real quickly.
If I'm not asking, you don't have to put a win number on it, but do you think he's good enough to make that leap to the next level and lead this team, let's say, to a winning record?
Oh, yeah. I think he can, if given the right structure, the right environment. He doesn't have to win the game. He just can't lose it.
Right.
You know, what it's going to turn into. You know, if Saquon's there, you can rush the ball better. If he can make some key throws to some of these speedsters he has, they got a chance to be really good. I think they'll be better defensively. I love the head coach's mentality. Love it. You know, will he stay consistent that way throughout? I think he will. I think that's going to be the difference.
The Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh, boy.
Drafted. I should tell you, I don't even know the reason. My son loves the Eagles. Just he came to me one day, I think just because he likes Eagles, and he said, I love the Eagles. And I said, no, you can't. And he said, I do. And I said, okay. So I pay a little bit closer attention to the Eagles now because of that. Jalen Hurts, you know, question marks when they drafted him, you know, having Carson Wentz there already. They never really gave Wentz, really, I don't feel he ever had, right, all the, you know, they didn't empty, you know, the pocketbooks to get him weapons. They never, no. They kind of left him. I felt like obviously had some unlucky, you know, with some injuries, but also I never thought he was given the right tools to succeed either. Now with Jalen Hurts kind of taking over this team, I don't even know. I could flip a coin and that's what I'm going to get every week from them. So what's your take on the Eagles? Are they in the conversation, right? Like when we look, the first two teams we talked about, right? You have Dak, Zeke, Cooper, and others. The Giants have Jones. We don't know what he is yet. He's no Dak, but they have Jones, Barkley, Galladay, and others. What do we have in Philadelphia?
Hurts, Smith, they have talent. Let's just be honest. They have talent. There's a new coach. There's a new environment. Jalen Hurts is not in the same situation, I think, as Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz, at one time, was going to be the MVP of the league, gets hurt. Obviously, guy wins the Super Bowl. Guy has a statue built out in front of the stadium.
Well, the wrong guy.
That's my point. And so no one thought about how that was going to sit on Carson Wentz's head. But Jalen Hurts is not worried about that, that he wasn't there at that time. So I think he's maneuvering under a lot of different type of pressure. Now, they did bring in another young quarterback along with a veteran quarterback. You know, there's competition there. I don't think any guy who's playing quarterback in National Football League is a great competition.
No.
But at the same time, did they do enough on the offensive line to give this guy a chance to be successful? Well, we'll see. Because, again, it goes back. This is when coaching comes into play. When you do have a talented quarterback, you do have some other talented, skilled players. I don't know much about the new head coach. We're going to find out about him real quick. But I think that's going to be the big unknown as they head into the season.
How much do you know about Jalen Hurts? Like, what are the things that he or the new head coach, what situations does he need to be in to be successful?
I think the type of talent that Jalen Hurts is, I think he can make every throw. I don't see a throw that he can't make. He's also very dynamic running with the football. You know, he's not Michael Vick, but he's that next level. You know, he has talent that way. I think you have to use that ability. He's young. If any time to run him is now, you know, because you won't do it 5-6 years from now. So you might as well get that out of him to have him be the best version of him. You have a very talented receiver now who won Heisman Trophy. And to me, you got to feature this guy. You got to get him the ball. You still have those tight ends there. You got to use those guys. So I just think Jalen Hurts is in a situation where he could thrive. But again, I don't know about the coach. I just don't know. And I wish I did know more. But I think he has a chance to be one of the better quarterbacks. And right now, I think he's got a chance to be in the top 15 quarterbacks.
Do teams, because listen, we always talk about, I think every team we've talked about offensive line. Do teams with, I hate this term, but with mobile quarterbacks, do they sometimes fall into the trap of not paying enough attention to their offensive line because they know that their quarterback has some escapability? And obviously, I'm going to go and say right off the bat, that's a mistake if they do, but do you feel like they do it maybe too often?
You just said that's a mistake. You can never have enough protection for who you think is your franchise quarterback. Because all it takes is the one right hit and he's done. You know, so these quarterbacks only have so many hits in their body. So at the same time, you got to make sure guys are not just taking some unnecessary shots. And I do agree with you. I think some people say, okay, we can take a lesser player here because this guy has this skill. We can take a lesser player there because this guy has this skill. I'm not trying to knock them, but go look at Seattle.
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
Yeah, that's the way they built it. I mean, they built it with guys who were basketball players. Are you kidding me? With a franchise quarterback. And that's why he started to scream a little bit because he knows that, wait a minute, I'm not the same athlete I used to be, you know, so I need a little bit more protection. And he's right. He does. Yeah.
I have them kind of finishing below 500 and struggling again this year. But for my son's sake, let's hope they do well. The Washington football team, are they ever going to get a name?
It sounds like they're going to hold on to this for as long as they can.
I have used the other name and I know it's not their name anymore. So I try not to, I will say this, And I don't know if you've heard this. There, right when Washington did that, shortly after, a team in the CFL, the Edmonton, then became the football team, has now become the Edmonton Elk. And it's horrible. You can laugh. It's a terrible name. And so I'm just like, I hope Washington, if they're taking this long, right, they come up with something really good. Because if they come up with something like the Washington, and I know this name, I think might be actually trademarked, so they can't. But the Washington Senators, I'm gonna be really upset. Like, I hope they.
We all would be.
Like, I hope they do something. If it takes this long,
leave the team there.
Yeah, I pick on, you know, my hometown Raptors all the time, because they you know, they did it because Jurassic Park was out and it was popular. And it's true. And Barney was out and he was a dinosaur. That's why the colors were purple. And I'm the type where I look up, like, I do a thing, right? You know, the whole sports fluent thing. I say, hey, be more fluent. And I say, well, why do teams have their names? Because people ask me, why are the Lakers the Lakers? And I explain it, right? And I go through all of them. And so why are the Raptors the Raptors? And I said, money. It was, they wanted a name that was popular. There was a movie that was out. Because if you look at it, not one Raptor came north of Phoenix.
No.
So it wasn't like we had, I'm going to go on a little rant here for a second, coach, bear with me. So, because when the team got the name, I was huge. There was no Oklahoma City team. I wanted them to be the Toronto Thunder. Mm. And I'll tell you why I wanted to be the Toronto Thunder. One, because it makes sense. Toronto, you probably don't know this, the most Thunder than any other North American city. On average, every other day. Right? So now it makes sense. Thunder. I already had that of course, because I'm, you know, used to watch the Bulls, that intro music. So I had, you know, the lights coming off, Thunderstruck by AC/DC playing in the background, thunder, da, 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 the lights flashing.
They didn't call me.
Black and silver, which was still, you know, a little Raiders there, right? Popular colors in those days. It was 95, if you recall. It would have been just as popular, and still you could use it today. They didn't listen. They went with the Raptors. Fine. So listen, the Pelicans, there's some bad, no offense, but there's some bad names out there. And if you're going to take 2 years, make it a good one.
Daniel Snyder, we're telling you, you got.
I am available if you need a consultant. Just call me. That being said, they got obviously put a product on the field, and they've made some, I think, good changes.
They did,
which I'm not surprised. So, where do you want to start with Washington? Where how do they look this year? Their defense.
Their front seven is as good as anybody in football, and if they can match it on offense, you know, they're going to be that team that, if they can score 24, 26 a game, they'll win the division. You know, I think they're the most talented team in the division next to Dallas. Okay. If Dallas is healthy, then that's a whole different game. If Dallas is not totally healthy, then this is what you're going to get, you know, just what it is.
I went all draft day a couple of years ago in the draft, and I had your old friend Cynthia Freeland on right before that draft.
Right.
And we were talking about the Bengals having the first pick. And I think her and I were the only two people who said they shouldn't take Burrow. They should take Chase Young. And I went all drafted when I said anyone, as long as it's Young at number one, because I think they needed to start with defense. That being said, I think your point is very valid, right? Their defense is strong. Is there offense? I know we don't know. There's question marks because we haven't seen them, but is their offense, do you think they have enough pieces to get that 21, 24 points, like you said, a game?
They do. I think, you know, obviously the quarterback position is still a question, but they have a wild veteran there. They have enough talent in the backfield. They have enough talent, especially at receiver. I think they're very fast receiver. It's going to come down to the schematics of it. I think that's what it was a year ago. What can Fitz do now? He's not, certainly he's not the runner he used to be. But at the same time, he can deliver the ball. He plays with anticipation. He plays with fire. So if that spreads throughout that team, look out. Great things can happen.
How can he, so let's pause on Fitz for a second. He's this enigma wrapped in a conundrum, right? Like, I've seen him look like the greatest quarterback ever. And I've seen him look like the worst quarterback ever. What do you see? Is it confidence? Is it footwork? Is it, does he try to do too much? Is there something that you can say it's any of those things? Is it just
all of it?
Is it as simple as inconsistency? Like,
yeah, it's all of it. He is a gunslinger. And I think we all know that. And he needs to play a wide open game. He plays best when it's almost like the run and shoot. That's when he's been at his best. And so to me, if I'm going to bring a guy like that to my organization, I got to go find the things that he does extremely well and go do all of them to give him a chance to have our team be better. I think they'll do that. Just kind of knowing Ken Zampese a little bit, the guy's quarterback coach, that's what they're focused on, those things. They're focused on the things that he does well and give him a chance to do that.
Okay, so everybody's healthy. Is it? I think we'll agree. It's either going to be Dallas or Washington, right? That wins that division.
That's the way I feel. Yes, sir.
If you had to pick,
Washington.
You're going with the defense.
Defense
still.
They have some real game changing players in that front seven. Dallas doesn't have that.
Yeah.
And I think Washington, if they can, fashion together an offense that's competitive, I think they'll be standing there in the end.
Just to be contrarian, I'll say Dallas, but I think I was leaning Washington, and just so at the end of the year, I could say I told you so, or you could tell me told me so. But I think we both agreed New York and Philadelphia could be looking up, unfortunately.
Yep.
Okay. So when I sent this to you this week, you probably were like, what is he talking about? Mahomes versus Brady. And I'll tell you where this came from. Or maybe you know. Deshaun Jackson talked about, the differences between the two. And mm-hmm. I thought, you know what? Okay, that's from a player's perspective. I want to hear from coach. When you look at prime, and Mahomes probably isn't even in his prime yet, let's be honest, which is scary. But we look at Mahomes at his best, I guess, and Brady in his prime. What are the things that you see are similar, right, in these two great quarterbacks? And what are the things that you see, other than, look, actually, I'll leave it open. I was going to say other than the obvious, which we know what the obvious one is, but what are the differences between the two?
The similarities between the two is they're both winners. They play with a fire and a passion that that they're the quarterback of your football team. The things that are not similar is the athletic ability piece. Patrick's a different type of athlete than Tom is. Tom has enough athletic ability, obviously, to do what he did. And he was surrounded by some great coaches that created an environment for him to be great. And he helped that process. Whereas when you think of Patrick, he doesn't have to have everything perfect because he plays, he plays kind of off schedule at his best. That's when he's at his best. So I think those are the differences, but the similarity piece is the biggest piece for anybody. We can compare this young man a little bit to Tom Brady. That's saying a lot. I don't think he's there yet. I know everybody was saying, boy, if he won that game, he takes the title. Even myself, that's the way I felt too. I thought he would go on a run like Tom. But people don't understand how hard that is. I had to really go back and ask myself, what Tom Brady has accomplished may never be accomplished again. It might not ever happen, but is this guy talented? Oh my gosh, he's extremely talented. And if they can keep him healthy, and they understood how important it was to have linemen because they made the trade with the Baltimore Ravens because they know that their best chance is with him playing and him not being injured. And that's what you have to do with the great ones.
Yeah, Brady, why Brady's so special, right? And this, it was kind of this perfect storm that came together, right? Mm-hmm. Just think about what happened. First, you had to have a quarterback who got injured, right? Because they had a starting quarterback in New England. Yeah. And, just the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, obviously Coach Belichick, the system that they were running, the players, Belichick getting the control to say, hey, I'm going to get rid of a player a year too early versus a player too late, which takes a lot of guts.
It does.
Right.
And come back sometime. Yeah. I think it's James Collins. Hey, Jim, you got to go. But he'll bring you back. That's just kind of who he is.
Yeah, there's that Patriot way. And I think that's what made it so special is
yes.
you had this quarterback who could, and look, he proved last year, right? He can do it in a different system, but who really owned that system and you know that rotation of players. If you think about it, other than that year with Randy Moss, he never had really an elite. Look, he turned a lot of receivers into great receivers, never really had an elite receiver other than obviously that. Other than one of the greatest of all time.
And you just said, but that tells you how good he is. You know, he's able to, and it tells you what quarterbacks should do, raise the level of play around you. You know, when you're able to do that, you can be considered one of the best. You know, I never understood why everybody said, well, Aaron Rodgers has no weapons. They could give him more. Well, Tom Brady played less.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's always my argument. That I said, Tom Brady didn't have Davante Adams all those years.
No.
Right? So no. Now he, you know, but he made Wes Welker and, you know, others.
Those guys should be money. They should be paying him for all the money he helped those guys make.
I'm pretty sure they're now lifelong friends. I'm pretty sure. So one of the things with Patrick Mahomes that I, you know, because he was a pitcher, like he, and I believe his dad was a pitcher too, right? In the, or at least he played in the majors.
That was a baseball player. I don't know if he was a pitcher.
I think he was a baseball player. But you see a lot of different angles that he throws from.
Yes.
And I was having a debate last week because we were talking about the skill of players in the 20, 30 years ago versus the skill of players today. Mm-hmm. One of the arguments from someone said, well, players today focus on one sport and that's why they're more skilled. And I said, well, I don't necessarily agree with that in all sports, because I think like basketball, they might be better at certain things, but if you look at their fundamentals, they're not as strong. Right. And I said, and if you actually look at the greats, like the not all, but the like if you look at all the elite players, most of them did multiple sports, right? Like, you know, Jerry Rice doing ballet, you know, Patrick Mahomes pitching, like Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, those guys are all, most of them are all dual sport athletes. Mm-hmm. And so the pitching, is that a, if you were, you know, talking, now you're dealing with guys in college, but if you were talking to, you know, a high school kid who said, hey, I want to stop playing this sport because I want to focus on that one. As a coach, would you say, no, play that other sport because there's certain tools and other things you can use
For
that other sport? Like, would you encourage multiple sport athletes, I guess,
is the question? I would encourage definitely multiple sports athletes. I think there's something to your training and something even to the competition piece, and even something to the physical getting ready part of it. I just think it helps the player down the line in some fashion. How to overcome adversity in a different way, in a different environment, how to see things more clearly than you would have just engrossed in one sport. I've seen some of it, as you just mentioned, a lot of them, some of the greatest players, they've all played multiple sports and they've been really good at them. And they've been had the ability to be drafted in baseball, the ability to be drafted in basketball, you know.
I think of so many quarterbacks, right? We're pitchers, right? I think Elway.
Go back to the kid that played Florida State, that played basketball with the New York Knicks.
Oh, Charlie Ward.
Absolutely.
Right. He won the Heisman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tremendous quarterback, but he went to play basketball.
Well, you know? I don't think they wanted to let him be a quarterback because he was too short.
There you go.
Which now does that thing. Yeah.
Not a question.
Yeah. I don't know how much you play Madden football. But I guarantee you, everyone on your team down at TSU is playing Madden football, and they just came out with an MVP edition, and it's got Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady on the cover, and doesn't have the last two MVPs. I believe Aaron Rodgers. I hope I'm correct. Aaron Rodgers and Lamar Jackson. It's not from your perspective, from what you heard coaching, do players care?
Yeah, they do.
They want the Madden cover. They want the 99 rating on Madden.
There's no doubt.
Yeah,
because what we fail to realize, there's so many gamers in this world, and they're playing the game, and it might be their nephew, their cousin, their uncle. Somebody's playing this game, and you want to, just like you want to compete on the field, you also want to compete off the field, and that's really important. We had a group of people on TSU's campus just yesterday, who, I forget the name of the company, but they own one of the biggest gaming companies in the world. And it sounds to me like some NFL players are really starting to get into gaming and create their own teams. And obviously there's fees, there's money, there's all kinds of things that go on with this. It's going to be something huge. I know there's a big convention in Vegas, the 6th through the 9th, that this thing is going to really take off. So it's going to be interesting.
All right. Well, you know, if we're looking for another business venture, I think me, you, Chad 85, B Marsh, we get a, I'll handle the technical side of it. And you let those guys know we're going to get an esports. Because right away, I thought when you started saying players getting involved in esports, I immediately had a flashback to episodes of Ballers, that movie with Dwayne Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
Where right, that there's that player who's like, I think I'm going to quit football become a full-time gamer. And he thought, what? And he's like, what? I make just as much money and I don't have to destroy my knees. So
it came out, and I can tell you the name of this article. Juju Smith-Schuster, Valdez, the receiver,
yep. Right?
They are two of the biggest gamers in the game. I never knew that.
I didn't know that either.
I never knew that. So these guys, it's called, if I can find this, yes, I can. It's called the it's off the drum.com. They're merging traditional, what they're trying to do now. They're going to merge traditional and innovating, moving forward in a sustainable future, the innovation and transformation of the food industry. So it created this. They're going to merge in traditional sports and esports.
Wow. It's something to, I knew, listen, I knew it's already, I don't even say it's getting big. It's huge.
Huge.
But I know that it's now becoming millions more mainstream. Yeah. Than ever before. So maybe, I'll see if I can get an esports guy onto, or girl to, onto kind of make us more fluent. Last week. So two things from last week's episode that I just thought of that I wanted to ask you about. So one, Steve Weiss mentioned Justin Herbert, and he said, you know, let's see how he's, you know, does this year now, because now he's got new coaching staff, kind of a new environment. And then I was thinking a lot about it after he said it, and then about midweek I also realized and heard someone say, and let's see how he reacts, these young quarterbacks, and they specifically pointed out him, now that they're gonna have fans in the stands, because it is a different dynamic now when you have, you know, 40,000 people booing you or cheering you. There's an added pressure. Do you think, if I probably both, but do you think which one will have a bigger effect on him, the coaching or the crowd?
The coaching, by far. The crowd will too, but not the effect of the coaching, because the coaching is every day. The crowd is once a week.
You don't think it'll get him flustered?
No. I mean, it could happen, but if the coaching is not right, he's going to be flustered anyway.
Right. Okay.
So I just think it's that piece, because that is his lifeline. You know, someone has to create the opportunity for him to be as good as he was a year ago. So he stepped into some big numbers last year. So people are looking for him to repeat that. So that's pressure within itself. Now you have a new coach. You have a new offense. You're learning new things. How fast can you pick this up? You know, that's yet to be seen.
Yeah, and they're going to blame it on the sophomore slump, but it's also the growth expectations that people seem to forget about.
Yeah.
The other thing you mentioned was you being on campus are going to be you're going to be introduced to some new music you've never heard. We've never talked about music, so let me ask you, when you're sitting there trying to relax, what is it that you listen to, and have you learned or discovered a new artist down there in Nashville?
Well, I'm an R&B guy. I have not discovered a new artist. I think what Steve was talking about is at the games.
Oh, okay.
The band. And they play, you know, top of the line R&B music, and they compete against each other like you would not believe. And the music is loud. And they have there's no shame in that. And that's just what they do. And so it is different, a totally different environment. There's been some Fridays. Now that all of a sudden things get turned up to a different level, and I'm like, wow, you know, this is different, you know, but at the same time, it's been great. Our players understand the culture. It is a culture at these HBCU schools, and that's part of it.
I'm looking forward because, you know, I was talking to Steve after too. He's like, you know, the drum line, the step, the
Yes.
guys would be stepping. I'm
Yes.
like, yeah, it's not just in the movies anymore. So speaking of HBCUs, we also talked about the Hall of Fame game, and TSU is going to be part of that. So tell me a little bit about, like, was that already predetermined? When did that come up? What are some of the specifics we should
You
know?
know, I've learned, Anthony, that it came up after, Eddie was hired. You know, our first two games are going to be somewhat bowls. It's the Heritage Classic against Grambling and Canton. We're playing Jackson State in Memphis. You know, I forget the name of that. This is all new to me.
Right.
You know, and I'm learning because Kimberly, who runs my foundation, who you know, she found out that there's events that start. We play on a Sunday. Our first game's on a Sunday. So there's events for the Heritage Classic that goes Thursday, Friday, Saturday, up to Sunday. They have huge events. Matter of fact, there's a step show on Saturday.
Perfect.
That's going to be amazing. And we also understand that on that Saturday, it's also National Missing Kids Day. So we're going to do something with the foundation as well, and try to really make it something, a real special weekend for TSU. Obviously, we have to get their blessings for some of the things we want to do, and she's taking care of all that. But it's a huge event, and I never knew much about it. So I'm going to be, stepping over into something I never really understood, and I'm going to understand it because I want to understand it. I want to understand what the Heritage Classic really is and what it's about and why we're having it and what it really means, And so I'm looking forward to it.
So no pressure in the first 2 weeks. The Heritage Classic, Hall of Fame game in Canton, and then you go up against Dion, a little outspoken, in Memphis at Jackson State. Should be an easy couple of first few
Absolutely.
weeks.
I don't, can't water off the duck's back. It's what we do.
Just do it. Listen, I love it. I just, like I said, when he brought it up last week, I was like, this is amazing. We got to find a way to be a part of it. And I didn't know about the other part too. So I'm sure the foundation, if you get the blessing,
Yes, sir.
will be a part of that. And it is in Canton, which
Yes.
my geography is not that great. Is it close to where the family is?
Close. No, my family's in Cincinnati, so it's
Yeah, I know.
close.
That's what is it? I
Yeah.
don't, is it pretty close, Canton to
Not
Cincinnati, close
as close as
enough.
Cleveland than it is to Cincinnati.
Oh, fair
Oh,
enough.
yeah.
All right. Have you been to a lot of Hall of Fame events in the
Yeah.
past?
I went 2 years ago. So when Tony Gonzalez was inducted, he had me come as a guest. He brought me up, talked about me a little bit. So that was great. I was an influence in his career and made me feel good. But the fun part for me is when you go there, all the other inductees, they come. There's so many players I've been involved with in my career, from the Champ Baileys to the Ray Lewis's, the Ed Reeds. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. People that I've had unbelievable relationships with, and they're in the Hall of Fame. And I just see them as, and believe me, they were giants as football players when I watch them play. They're just normal everyday guys, they're just trying to make their way in life. And I just have so much respect for that.
Except they have that beautiful gold jacket.
Oh yeah, it's something to it.
I feel like I'm popping a bunch of extra questions on you because I keep thinking of stuff. When you think of the Hall of Fame, Deion Sanders said that he feels like there should be maybe another level, kind of for the, listen, there's this Hall of Fame is special. But even in the Hall of Fame, there's another level of Hall of Famer. Like, I know it
He's right.
sounds rude, but should there be a super elite? Like, should there be an
There should
added something?
be, because some of those guys were the best players ever to lace them up at their position. Jim Brown, for instance. You can't compare anybody to Jim Brown. And there's been some great runners. Walter Payton was a great runner, but Jim Brown was a different runner. So it's just how you look at things. And I heard what Deion said, there's the sky boxes, but then
Yeah, the
there's the
sky. Yeah, the sky. Yeah, exactly.
yeah,
Yeah.
and he's right. I mean, because he was one of those skybox guys.
Yeah.
He was a shutdown. They talk about a shutdown corner. That's who he was. So it's just interesting that he sees it that way. He thinks there should be a different type of voting. you know, and maybe there should be. I mean, if we're going to do everything right, just do it all the right way, you know.
Yes. So hey, just because it's the way they've always done it, just because it's normal doesn't make it right, right, Coach?
That's right.
All right, last surprise question. On I Am Athlete with Dion, he and Ocho, I'm always going to call him 8-5, just, you know, lined up in in their prime. Does Chad get open?
No. No.
No?
No, not in their prime.
Pardon the pun.
Now, I will say this, because we played against Dion when he's in Baltimore. He couldn't touch Chad or TJ or Chris Henry. We wore them out when he was last there. Now, he don't want to remember that.
Yeah. Well, that was Jordan. I hate to say this. That was Jordan on the Wizards. That was a little different. That was a different player.
Absolutely. It was different. But when Dion was in his prime and Chad was in his prime, Dion played some of the best receivers there were, and some of them didn't get close. And Chad is one of those great players, but Chad would have had a hard time with it. His length, the guys I watched Chad struggle with are guys who were long, had length, and could run. And that's who Deion Sanders is.
I had a debate about it, and I said, here's the difference. I go, it almost doesn't matter what Chad did, because Deion would be in the quarterback's head, and he wouldn't throw at him. And that, you can't catch a ball if they don't throw it in your direction.
You heard what he said. He'd go over and talk to the quarterback before the game.
Yeah, don't miss.
You don't want to throw it this way, because I'm going to take you to the house.
Unfortunately, we're going to end on something that we talked about a little bit before that is starting to come up again. And it's interesting because I feel like we haven't heard, not that it hasn't happened, but I feel like we haven't heard it to the same extent that we heard it maybe a few years back. There's been some players getting into some trouble with the police, with weapons, as NFL players. And I don't know, maybe it's just me. Maybe I got numb to it, and that's why I'm saying it like this. But there seemed to be a peak, and then it kind of, you know, I don't know if it plateaued or it just quieted down. And now it seems kind of to creep back up again. Is it the nature of the beast? Is it COVID and they're just going stir crazy? Is it what's going on?
I think it's a combination of all of that, Anthony. I think some things run in cycles. There was a quiet time. You know, and I thought there would be more issues when COVID was really going on. You know, I really did, because guys didn't have the outlets that they were used to having. Now, all of a sudden, it seemed like because we've gotten through the peak of COVID, that now here comes the peak of issues. You know, we have guys with guns in their cars. We now have players who are getting shot. You know, there's just so many things that are starting to happen. There's been four things over the last week that's gone on like this that is concerning, you know, and a lot of people don't want to give statements about what's happening. We hear it, we'll work through it. We've even had more assistant coaches getting in trouble, you know, for DUIs and those type of things. So I really wish I had the answer, but I've seen this thing come full circle, you know, at some point in time, and here it is. And I think, if anything, I think the teams got to heed the warning, and they got to have the real conversations with their players about what's happening, because you can lose your team real fast this way.
How do you deal? I know you've had a lot of personalities. I don't know if you've had these types of issues. How does a coaching staff, how do you deal, you know, let's say one of your players gets in trouble this way. I don't want to pick a specific thing because I'll just leave it open, but is it just, hey, we address the team, we tell them, you know, is it an open conversation? Is it, how do you deal with it internally?
I've seen it done a lot of different ways. The best I've seen it done, because I've been involved in this, has been when you're very transparent and you put it out there. Because there's a lesson to be learned. Because what happens is some of these guys think if you don't address it, they think, well, they can go do it too. And so you have to. And I mean, that's when the head coach has to be the dad, you know, and he's got to be disciplinary, and he's got to be willing to chop some heads and stomp on some feet if he has to. But because you have to let it be known that it's not tolerated, because it could turn into a big problem. When I was in Cincinnati, we had a huge problem for a while. And then Marvin put the buck down, said, We're not doing this anymore. I don't care who you are. And when that happened, and people start to see that he would react, and there was consequences, things changed.
Well, let's hope that, you know, is there enough information? Is there enough mentorship? Like, look, I'm assuming it's younger players, but I shouldn't paint them all with one brush. I hope that the veterans are smarter, but is there enough mentorship, enough information, enough, you know, whatever is needed, you know, to, especially with, listen, young players, you're getting involved, you're getting some money, you know, life changes for you. Is there enough of that to go around that they have that support system? Or do you think, you know, not to put the NFL, you know, I'm not putting the target on them, but does the NFL do enough to help these young men out to become educated and know? Like, look, some people are just going to do it anyways. I get that, but
I think players are scared of resources, because if I tell you that I have an issue, you might tell so-and-so, and it might cost me. And so that's what you're fighting against. I mean, the two examples that keep coming to my mind right now is Zavin, whatever his last name is, that's at Arizona. So he gets busted for drunk driving. We just had Twyman, the kid from Minnesota Vikings, who's from University of Pitt, goes and gets shot four times. They just entered the league. They're rookies.
Yeah.
How does this happen? You would think you wouldn't have a first round draft pick driving under the influence. Or a young man who goes and visits his family now. You get shot in front of your family's house. Something's not right. So I just think there's got to be more digging done, because it could, I mean, we're talking about things that could cost lives on either side. So it's concerning.
Well, let's hope that, let's hope the cycle closes quick. Because like I said, it seemed like there was a quiet time. So,
yes.
I always say this, whatever happens, learn from it, right? It's never bad to learn. You're never always going to succeed. You're going to fail, as long as, you know, you see those things and we can learn from them. So let's hope that opens some, you know, maybe it's another rookie who finds themselves in a position, they're like, hey, I know what just happened to this person, so maybe I'll make a better decision this time. So, coach, as always, thank you so much for your time.
Is there
anything we didn't cover you'd like to send us off? You know what? Send us off with TCU. What's obviously the HBCU game, but how's the team looking? How's the install of the offense? Or something else, feel free.
The install is going well. The players were overwhelmed at first because they're learning the NFL way. You know, some of these guys have aspirations of playing in the National Football League. Some of them never got under center before. Some of them never had to call a play in a huddle. So it's new. But they're starting to get excited about it because, like, wow, okay. And when you can sell them, this is what you're going to have to do. They need to learn it now. So they've all bought in and they all dialed in. I think we have enough talent. I have a tremendous coaching staff on offense. Coach George has done a great job of assembling staff. And I think once we get our hands on them come August 7th, will I really have an idea of what type of team we are? I know we work hard. I know they're eager. I know they're gritty. They do what we ask. But at the same time, the games play between white lines, you know, and with a football and pads. And so I'll find out more about them then.
So you said calling plays in the huddle. Are they also going to have some freedom, like with some, will they have some audibles? Will they have some?
Oh, yeah. They're going to learn how to play quarterback, you know, and I think that's what's exciting for them. And I have a few older guys and they have aspirations. So they'll be more prepared and understand what things look like and sound like more so. So that's exciting, but all that means nothing if you can't win.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's,
and at the end of the day, it comes down to wins and losses. And
it don't mean a thing if you don't get the win.
You're going to go 12-0. You just don't have long play calls. I can do that in a heartbeat. So it is what it is.
Tell Coach Keenan that I'm working on my 40 time. I will be in touch.
Are you fluent in sports? get the full Sports Fluent experience by joining us on YouTube by searching Sports Fluent. Or you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at sports_fluent, or by visiting sportsfluent.com. Need more from sports? Don't forget to check out undraftedsports.com. The Undrafted Sports Media Network has everything you need from every sport under the sun. We'll be right back.